Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. Dive into the mind of former NFL quarterback Clint Sterner.
I like a good time. I like to have a party.
I know you do.
It's Dirty's Daily.
Dirty's Daily here on Sports Radio 610. Brandon Scott and Adam Spillane filling in on The Drive for Dirty and Ron Hughley. T-Mill is here, though, so got at least one-third of your normal drive situation.
Yeah, I decided to come to work today, you know. No big deal.
And I know Dirty's Daily used to be Clint Sterner's football at 4. I know that the theme of this segment, this hour, is normally, you know, tends to lean football. But we got a baseball team that's got a lot going on right now. Like, do you feel like it's safe to say, Tyler, that we are kind of fighting for our lives?
100%.
Fighting for our lives. Like, it's not, you know, it's still early. All of those kind of cliches, I mean, and everything.
Yeah, I mean, we're fighting for our lives more so at this point in the season than we have in, like, a decade.
Like,
yeah.
How long are you able to be 10 games below 500 before you're allowed to get worried? You know what I mean?
I mean, as soon as you fall 10 games below 500, right, you should probably be worried.
Thank you.
There are not a lot of teams that are 10 games under 500 that, like, ever amount to a whole lot. Pretty
Thank
rare.
You. Thank you. Which leads me to my point here. I want to celebrate. I want to be happy. I want to live in the moment. I want to be like, yeah, rah, rah, rah. I'd let her do it. One of my favorite things to do. I know we go to Minute Maid Park and we work, but sometimes I do like to sit out in center field and just kind of be with the people. Not really engage with some of what they do, but like people watch, maybe laugh at them a little bit, you know, have a beer. I like to do. I want to celebrate. I want to have this celebratory feeling about what the Astros got going on. But man, they ain't did nothing. They just haven't, man. Like, I credit to them for winning 4 of the last 5. Credit to them for winning 2 or 3 against a viable baseball team in the Cleveland Guardians. But I'm just not ready to get there. Now, you make something happen this weekend against the Seattle Mariners, against the actual leaders of the AL West right now. Not to overstate what the Seattle Mariners are, but the point is, you need to string together. You need to show more of a pattern. What are your patterns and tendencies right now? What's your identity right now? It is bad baseball. It is losing baseball overall. You want to see more of what you've seen for the most part in the Cleveland series, the Victor Caratini moment notwithstanding, and some of the smaller moments notwithstanding. Like, you want to see a better version of baseball, and I'm not sure that I've seen enough of it to be convinced that this is who the Astros are. I am still on the skeptical side of the Astros being the team that we have come to be used to.
Well, you don't accidentally fall into 11-20.
No.
11-20 is 11-20, and it's not like they're 11-20 with a positive run differential. I mean, they, you know, at least before that Rocky series, they were bottom 5 run differentials.
Yeah.
So it's not like there's been some unluckiness to it.
Yeah.
When you go 1-8 in one run games, yeah, there's some unluckiness that comes with that. But at the same time, and Alex Bregman said this a couple weeks ago when they were, I think they were 4-16 or whatever, or 6-14 after the Braves series. You know, he got asked, like, are you is the way you've played indicative of the record? He's like, yeah, we have been as bad as the record would say that we have been. And that was the case after even that Cubs series. Now, obviously, it's been better over these last five games, and it helps whenever you play the Rockies, but you can't count on playing the Rockies. The Rockies are only on the schedule two more times the rest of the year, so you're going to have to start beating some good teams. They did that this week by taking 2 of 3 from Cleveland. They got another tough series coming up here against Seattle. Mariners are good. Mariners have given them problems the last couple of years. They've won the season series with the Astros last year. Does not get any easier after that because you got to go play the Yankees, and the Yankees are playing really good right now too, and the Yankees just swept you 4 games to start the year. And by the way, I don't know if you knew this, the Yankees and Astros don't really like each other. So it does not get any easier for it. You can't just like rest on, oh, we won 4 or 5. No, yeah. You have to continue to carry things over into this series, into the next series, into the series after that, into the series after that, because it's not going to be enough to just like continue to go 12-8. Like, you can't count on that. Like, you really have to start, you know, scraping together a good couple of months to climb out of this hole.
They need streaks, like win streaks, you know, 3 games, 4 games here. No, they need to rattle off one of those more impressive. Oh, you look up. Oh, the Astros have won 8 straight or 9 of 10 or something like that. They need a couple of those.
And even 9 and 10, you're still under 500.
Yeah.
Or you're like right at 500, I guess.
Yeah. No, they need to pick it up and probably pick it up a lot quicker than we like to say, given how long the baseball season. What about the Alex Bregman problem? I want to get to some of these negatives first as we dive through what's going on with the Astros. And then we'll hit some positive stuff because they do have some positive things going on. But I want to hit a couple of these negatives. Alex Bregman got his first home run. Which game? Was that the first Guardians game?
Tuesday.
So he got his first home run of the season Tuesday. I mean,
shout out to my guy, Alex Bregman.
Shout out to Alex Bregman. I am somewhat protective of the guys who are proven here and who have won here. But I'm making no bones about it with the Alex Bregman thing. You expect a whole hell of a lot more from a guy that once competed for an MVP, would have won it if Mike Trout didn't exist. And even last year, I think, Spo, you did a good job of like whenever we would hear people talk about Alex Bregman or criticize, we're like, wait a minute, this is still one of the better third basemen in baseball. Like, what is the... I feel like there's an answer to the Alex Bregman problem, or does it have to resolve itself? I don't really know what to do with him at this point.
I mean, I hate to say this because it's going to drive people crazy, but at some point he's going to hit.
You think so?
That is my assumption because he has done it his entire career. He has always started things slow, but then he always figures it out. And listen, it's been bad. Like, I can't sit here and say that it hasn't been bad because it has been bad. They've tried to move him around. They've tried to do little things. I think the big thing that stands out with Bregman right now is that one of the things that made him the player that he is his ability to lay off pitches, and he's chasing pitches right now. And part of that, I think, has to do with him just pressing at this point, which is what happens when you aren't going well. But I think that eventually he will start to produce the way that he has produced the last 3-4 years.
So Matt Kawahara, am I saying that right?
Kawahara.
My bad, Matt. Shout out to you, Matt Kawahara.
It's a tough last name, bro. It's
but Matt K from the Houston Chronicle, covers the Houston Astros for the Chronicle, mentions that Christian Javier is going to pitch for AA Corpus Christi when?
Tomorrow.
All right, so that's a good sign.
Scheduled for 4 innings and 60 to 65 pitches.
I had a little bit of fun at his expense about the crook in his neck because, you know, it's like, well, yo, we kind of need you out there, man. Sleep right. But Christian Javier does look like he's on the right track. That's a good sign. What would having him back, and especially the way he was pitching, what would having him back do for the Astros' mission of getting this thing corrected?
Well, he was off to a really good start. So you get a quality starting pitcher back in there, and it gives you a few more options, you know, down the road, because obviously they were throwing out, you know, they were in some trouble when it came to the starting pitching early in the year when they had some guys hurt. They're bringing up Blair Henley from Round Rock to make an emergency start. Like,
poor Blair.
You don't want to be put in that position. And also, they're going to go to a 6-man rotation, it sounds like, pretty soon, at least when Javier does come back. But it also means that some guys who are in the rotation who maybe have not been very good this season are going to have to start pitching well. Otherwise, they're going to lose their spot in the rotation. You've already seen JP France get sent down. Hunter Brown could be, you know, next in line if he doesn't start to pitch better than he has so far this season. So, you know, you can never have too many starting pitchers, and just getting him back will certainly help, especially if he pitches the way that he did before he got hurt.
Are you surprised about Hunter Brown? Because I feel like there was an expectation that he was going to be, I don't know, like a lot of the Justin Verlander comparisons were way overplayed and overblown. It was more of a mechanical thing. We never thought he was going to be Justin Verlander, but I did think that he was going to be a mainstay in this rotation going forward. Like I am surprised that we are even having that we've reached this point to where we're not really sure what we have in Hunter Brown.
No, they needed him to be good. Like they really needed him to be good. When you consider all the pitchers that they've lost, the lack of, you know, they have not had draft picks. Like he was supposed to be that guy to step in, especially when you consider that their best starting pitcher, Justin Verlander, is 41. Their second best starting pitcher is Framber Valdez, and he's a free agent next year. Like they need that guy. They just, you know, they needed him. And he hasn't been quite as bad as the numbers would say. Like the start he had against Cleveland on Tuesday, he gives up the 3-run homer. It was on a pop-up.
Yeah.
Like that's a home run in one ballpark, and it just happens to be this one, unfortunately for him.
And he responded well.
Yeah, he pitched well. He pitched for the most part. He pitched well after that, but he does need to be better. And that's why getting Javier back, getting Urquidy back, getting McCullers and Garcia back down the road, it gives you more options so that if he doesn't pitch well, you don't feel like you have to have him in the rotation because you don't have anybody else to go to. They will have other guys to go to if they need to.
Yeah, man, it's one of those things. Like Hunter Brown, I think he was chalk for me. I'd penciled him in as an effective starter, a guy who was going to, you know, be somebody that they could rely. Why do you think, I know we said he has to be better. Why do you think he isn't? Because that's the surprising part. I thought he would be a lot more reliable. Like maybe Justin Verlander light in terms of he's not Verlander, but he is going to give you quality starts and length. I thought he was going to be all of those things. And it just like, what do you think is missing with the dude?
Command. I mean, it's pretty simple. I know. People made the Verlander comparisons because the delivery is similar, but that's like it.
And he idolized him. He grew up in Michigan.
It was a Detroit thing. Yeah, but they really share no other similarities. Like the pitch mixes are completely different. And obviously, Hunter Brown doesn't have Verlander's type of command. Like Verlander can throw the ball wherever he wants, wherever he wants, and Hunter Brown can't do that at this point, which is normal for a young starting pitcher. So hasn't been nearly as efficient as he needs to be. I don't think the strikeout numbers have been probably what they expected them to, what they thought that they would be, but like there's still talent there. There's still a lot to like. He's still young, and it takes, you know, it doesn't just happen overnight for most of these guys. Like it takes some time to figure out your mechanics and to figure out, you know, how to repeat your delivery and what works best. And, you know, it takes time. And the idea that it was going to happen right away was just probably not going to be the case. But again, there are things that you can really like. And, you know, he gets strikeouts. You know, he's over 10 strikeouts per 9 innings last year. That's down a little bit this year. But that's the sort of stuff that you want to be able to see.
In case you did not hear, Christian Javier is going to pitch tomorrow for AA Corpus Christi. He is scheduled for 4 innings and around 60 to 65 pitches. Joe Espada said that the hope is to have Javier on one rehab start, and then he can rejoin the rotation. That is from the Houston Chronicle. We're talking about Hunter Brown there, somebody who is a young pitcher for the Astros, who is pitching well, and I think has been a bright spot for them, is Spencer Arrigetti. Now, he was their, or it, I should say, is their highest rated pitching prospect, I believe. So you would hope that he gives you something when you call on him and you need him, but he was good last night and quiet as kept. He's been good for a little stretch there. What are you seeing? Well, before we get to you, Spo, let's actually hear from Joe Espada talking about Spencer Arrigetti and his start last night.
He's getting better every outing. And that was huge. You know, we needed, you know, a good start from him and take us deep in the game, and he did. And Taylor Scott, first major league win, that's huge also.
He's been better than I expected he would be. And I know the numbers don't look great, but I like the way he competes. I like the stuff. He can strike guys out. He's striking out 26% of the hitters that he's facing. Like, that's great stuff to have for a starting pitcher. And again, it's just consistency, it's efficiency, it's throwing strikes more consistently. His big issue the first couple of starts was that he couldn't put hitters away, like guys. But he'd get to 1-2 and he wouldn't be able to put a guy away. He's been better at that. I think the start that he had against the Braves, again, it wasn't like a great start by any stretch, but that's a really tough lineup to face. And he came out like he was not afraid of those guys.
Yeah.
Like he is not overwhelmed by the moment. He's not overwhelmed by the competition. And I think that's a real important step in the right direction for him. He probably should not be up in the big leagues yet. Like he's probably not ready. And you can kind of tell, like, he's got some stuff that he's got to work out. But the fact that he's up here now and he's competing the way that he has, I think I've been really impressed. I think that he's a guy who's got some ability to be a really key part of their. I mean, he's probably not a top-of-the-line starter, but he's a guy who's going to really be able to fill out the rotation for a long time.
Here was the man in his own words following last night's start, in which, of course, the Astros came out on top.
I feel like even when things started to spin a little bit, I stayed in control, and that's something that maybe I haven't seen in some of my previous starts with peers, just like having that presence to make the adjustment pitch to pitch instead of taking another pitch to do it, and I think that that's the reason why I was able to have some success. Yeah.
I know we mentioned Brown earlier, but between what Eric Geddy's doing and it looking like Christian Javier is going to be back fairly soon, I'm starting to feel a little bit better about the road. I don't know if I feel great about it per se, but, and of course, obviously Verlander exists. You know, he's pitching for you now. So you got all of that going for you. Where are you at on the bullpen? How do you feel like the bullpen, where are you at on them in terms of performance and how they're being managed right now?
The top three guys seem to be getting better. I don't know what the like combined ERA between Hader, Presley, and Abreu was coming into the series, but it has gotten better. The fact that they were able to win last night's game without having to use any of the three was really important for them, because the guys after are not great. Like they don't have, you know, that they kind of, you know, overlooked that part of the bullpen over the offseason. But Montero's been okay. He's been better than he was last year. So yeah. I think a big reason why they started poorly was that the guys that you expected to be, you know, the guys who could seal games for you have not done that. But they have shown signs here in the last week that they are pitching better. And to see Hader on Tuesday go two innings and to be open to do it and to be open to do it again, I do think is important. They don't want to do it. It's not something that they want, because again, he was down, you know, Wednesday, which when they could have maybe used him in that extra innings game. But you know, he's been pitching better, and for him, he said the other day his slider hasn't been very good, and the numbers show that as well. Once he works that out, I think he'll be fine.
Explain the significance of that before we get out of here on that. Like the significance of being willing, because I thought it was interesting the way he explained it of like, hey, when I was pre-arbitration or like back before I got paid, I wasn't incentivized really to go out there and pitch multiple innings. I needed to go get that paper. I needed to do the thing that allows you. It was business.
Yeah. When he first got to the big leagues, he was a multi-inning weapon. Like he was a guy, I think it was 2018, 35 of his 55 appearances were more than one inning. And he was a guy who would go three. Like that's how they would utilize him. But he started to realize that, no, you know what? I'd rather be a closer. I want to get these saves because I'm the best reliever we have. I want to get saves because when I'm in arbitration, that's what matters in arbitration is the saves. It doesn't matter how many innings you've thrown. It doesn't matter how many strikeouts you have. It's all about saves. Saves are what get you paid. And so he wasn't willing to do it. You know, he would not go multiple innings. Now that he has gone through arbitration, now that he has gotten his money, he is going to be more willing to do it. Now it's just about, well, if we do this too much, is he going to get hurt? Because he has been remarkably healthy. I don't think he's ever been on the IL since he's been in the big league. So can we keep him healthy if we're going to do that? Again, it worked out okay the first time. My big thing is maybe not use him two innings, but if you got a lefty in the eighth that you want to use him for, that's when you go to him. And then you can use him for four outs, maybe not six, but you can go to him for four.
The Texans should want to play the Kansas City Chiefs on the opening Thursday night, and it don't have nothing to do with glitz and glamour. Brandon Scott, Adam Spillane, T-Mill in the building on the drive. We'll discuss that coming up next.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Cubley.
Texans Chiefs got some real energy around it, man. Y'all have heard us talking about it for quite a bit now here on the station. It's got some national legs. And honestly, it makes a lot of sense. Obviously, the Chiefs are going to be in that game because they are the reigning Super Bowl champion. So you got
Chiefs. I like that one right there.
On their schedule, a home game for them is the Houston Texans, among some others. Now, you could probably narrow it down to three really good options, non-division options for the Chiefs to open their season, okay? And come on, NFL, with that schedule, man. We waiting on you. But you can probably narrow it down to three really good candidates. One of them, the Baltimore Ravens. I think that speaks for itself. Lamar Jackson, MVP. They're the Ravens, right? Speaks for itself. The Cincinnati Bengals. They got Joe Burrow. The Bengals seem to be one of the few teams that's been able to somewhat figure out the Chiefs here and there at a time. And there's clearly a rivalry there. The Burrowhead back and forth, and then the Chiefs shutting that up. And there's a thing there. There is a there there. And then you have the Houston Texans, who there's no built-in rivalry per se, but there is a background in the history. But even more importantly, there's a future to look toward. There is a present versus future element of Patrick Mahomes versus CJ Stroud. There are storylines that you can build up. There is hype that you can work with to make this compelling television. And that's what this is about. It's about theater more than anything. We get into the actual nitty-gritty sports elements of it all, but it's really all about theater. So it's compelling. And I want to give credit to Nick Wright, Fox Sports 1, former Sports Radio 610, basically Sports Radio 610 alum, presented the idea, I thought, in a fairly decent way.
They've been doing the Super Bowl champion gets to host the first game of the year for 20 years. There has only been one divisional matchup in that entire time. I also, as much as I like Bake Show, I don't think the Bucks and certainly not the Saints are a draw.
Okay, they're out.
So that leaves us with the Ravens, the Bengals, and the Texans. I don't think they're going to pick the Bengals because Joe Burrow is rehabbing still and because Joe Burrow has, unfortunately, a tough history of either missing the very beginning of a season or coming in hurt.
It's fair.
So I don't think it's smart. Down so that then leaves you the Ravens or the Texans. I don't think it's fair to Baltimore. I don't think you can ask Baltimore, hey, you guys are supposed to win the Super Bowl. You choked it away in the last game you played in, and now go to their building and watch them hang the banner. They're trying to, I think, promote one of the next teams. That's what they did with the Lions, who were the next team.
Wow.
The answer to this is the Houston Texans.
Wow.
I would like it to be Cincinnati for once and for that'd be now three straight wins over Cincinnati. You can set Burrowhead Invitational and shove it, but I think it's gonna be Houston, bro.
Look, I don't care nothing about being fair to Baltimore. In one breath, you say that they choked away their chance in the playoffs, and then on the other side, you say, it's not fair to them.
They actually did a Super Bowl rematch one year.
They did
a Broncos-Panthers Super Bowl rematch.
Oh, that's
16, so oh. I don't think they're worried about that.
Yeah. So what I want to get to here, though, that he brings up some good points, especially on the Texans side, but you think that from a Texan standpoint, aside from all of the, you know, the theater of it, right? The optics of it, the draw, the thing that the NFL is really kind of focusing on, like what is a good TV matchup for this opening game, which is what they're pondering. You think from a Texan standpoint, they should want this game. Like they should want this game and not just for the bright lights, but for how it could actually impact them functionally.
Yeah, I think there's a competitive advantage to playing on a Thursday for week one. For two reasons. First of all, you might not have to play another Thursday game the rest of the year. And so nobody wants to play on Thursdays because nobody wants to deal with the short week. However, in week one, the short week isn't a factor because it's preseason games and you have 2 weeks in between the first preseason, the last preseason game and week one. So short week is no issue. The other reason is that you get a rest advantage for week two. And that sort of stuff matters when you just any year, like always check the schedule to see if you have a rest advantage. And it's not like a 24-hour rest advantage. It's 3 days. And maybe you get lucky and the team that you're playing week two is playing on Monday night. And then you get an even bigger advantage. So that's the one benefit of playing on Thursday is that you get a rest advantage the next week against your opponent. And, you know, the margins in the NFL are very, very slim between, you know, how good these teams are. And sometimes having an extra 3 days in between games can be the difference between winning and losing a game.
Yeah, I personally, and T-Mill, I feel like you can kind of identify with this a little bit. I personally want to watch them against the Chiefs to start the season because I think you mentioned this too earlier, Adam, about ripping them because you got to play them
anyway.
Yeah,
you got to play them. They're going to be on the schedule anyway.
So rip the Band-Aid, all right? I like that element of it. But also kind of going along with that is I want to know immediately, you know, and maybe, you know, by the end of the year, the Texans look different, the Chiefs look different, and that first game of the year for everybody doesn't really tell you much about what that team is by the end of the year. That could very well be the case. But with all the hype, with all the anticipation, with everything that's going into this thing, I want to know immediately, how do you stack up against the very best? It's not Super Bowl or bust. I don't think it's like that drastic of a situation with the Texans. They didn't do that damn much last year for us to be talking like that. But I do think they leveled up. I do think that they improved their football team overall from a football team that was better than most people thought or gave it credit for. I want to know how that translates against the very, very best in all of the NFL. From a Texans observation and watching standpoint, I want to check that test off the list. I want to get that off the checklist personally.
That's fine. I don't like that you learn a whole lot in week one. I mean, did you learn anything from that Texans-Ravens game week one?
I learned exactly where I was going
to
go.
I learned that they had a ways to go, that they weren't ready.
Sure,
you know, like I did. It was like, oh, I'll tell you the value of that game. I was like, oh, you know what? I'm excited about the newness of this team.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but the quarterback is a rookie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, but the offensive coordinator is in his first year. Oh, but the head coach is also a rookie. Like they,
and that might be the reason it's a hard comp. Because this year's just a totally different thing. I mean,
it's not a rookie quarterback.
Right. It's not Stroud's first NFL game now.
But it's not D'Amico's first game as a head coach.
Well, and that's why I qualified that and said, hey, by the end of the year, things could be totally different. And maybe you don't. But I want to know.
Although, really quick, it is funny. they weren't very good the last game against the Ravens either. So,
but they were excellent. Against, the Ravens game never happened. They were excellent against the Browns, and that Colts game, they weren't excellent necessarily in that game, but they started off excellent and they had some excellent moments. So, my point is, I feel like I will learn a lot about, say, what this offseason meant, like the meaningfulness of trading for Stephon Diggs. I want to have a good feeling for that. In week one, the meaningfulness of giving Danielle Hunter almost $50 million guaranteed over 2 years. Like, not necessarily everybody is going to perform indicative of what they are in that particular game, but to match it up against the game's supreme, against the game's very best, after you have made every effort to level up your team, I think that's tremendously exciting. But I do love this element of that you present of, hey, this is a competitive advantage. Like, don't look at it. I know Sean Pendergast this morning was like, I don't know if I want to start the season off against the Chiefs. I don't know how much I like that. Well, first of all,
come on, Sean.
Hey, look, I like your chances. I'm not saying I'm picking you per se, but the Chiefs aren't, it's not like they're unbeatable. The Lions did it last year. It's not like you absolutely can't beat them. Maybe you win the game, but also these things that you mentioned, the extra rest and the fact that the first Thursday night game is unlike the rest of them.
And also, that extra rest comes in handy because nobody really plays preseason. Like, your starters are not playing full preseason games. They might play a quarter. They might play a half. So then, all of a sudden, you're going in from maybe playing 10 to 15 snaps in one game to now you're playing 60 to 70 snaps in a game. So it would be nice to have a little extra rest after that first game, especially when the team that you're playing will not have that extra rest.
Coming up next, there is an elimination game in the NBA playoffs tonight, and I personally cannot wait for it. Going to talk about that with Adam Spillane on The Drive coming up. Well, there's two, but there's one that I'm more so excited about. The other one, I'll be maybe watching the Astros, but that's coming up next on The Drive.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Brandon Scott and Adam Spillane in for Clint Sterner and Ron Hughley on The Drive. We got T-Mill producing this thing for us. And I'm excited about tonight. I know we talked about the Astros. They have a really big opportunity in front of them to kind of continue on the winning ways that they've shown over the last week. But you also got a couple of elimination games, as Spo pointed out earlier. There's more than one. But is there, though? There's more than one elimination game in the NBA playoffs tonight. You got the Cavaliers and the Magic first, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to be, you know, finding something else to do while that game is going on.
Disrespect.
But then after that,
is going to be good. The other one is probably not going to be good.
Yeah, but you know what? I think I'm rubbernecking the other game, because here's my thing. I am here for, this could be a little bit bitter of me, but I am here for Luka Doncic being basically what James Harden was supposed to be. And that sounds a little bit loaded, because James Harden is an all-time great. I know it was sour the way things left, but I'm not finna be the one to try to minimize how great James Harden was. But I feel like Luka Doncic, averaging the close to 34-9-10 or 34-9-9 or something ridiculous like that in this series, he's been excellent. The Mavs have a chance to close out the Clippers, and I am noticing this dichotomy here of an aging, ailing Clippers team and a Luka Doncic who would have been my vote for MVP. I don't think he's going to win it, but ascending. And I'm shocked by the fact that things seem to be working out with this version of the Mavs. I did not think it was a good trade with Kyrie Irving. I did not think it was going to work. I did not think they were going to play good enough defense to compete. But lo and behold, man, we're out there, and the Mavs look like they got just as good a chance as anybody not named Denver to make some noise. I know Oklahoma City's the 2 seed, but or the 3 seed.
Oklahoma City's the one.
Oklahoma City's the 1 seed, and actually the 3 seed's Denver, isn't it?
They're the 2. Minnesota's the 3.
Okay, so let's go.
Clippers-Mavs is the 4-5.
That's right. Okay, so I feel like they are just as good as the teams ahead of them, not named Denver.
Maybe.
Because of the guy that's at the top of their team.
Maybe, but he hasn't been that great in this series, and he's been dealing with a little bit of a knee. It's been Kyrie Irving who's probably been their best player through the first 5 games of that series. He's the one who really led them back. They still lost the game Sunday, but he was the one who led them back. I'm not ready to go there yet with Dallas just because I don't think the Clippers are. And you kind of have seen it where, you know, Kawhi Leonard's been hurt. They lost the 2 games that Kawhi Leonard actually played in. And frankly, he wasn't very good when he did play. And really, aside from the first half of, they were really good in game one, the Clippers were. And they were really good the first half of game four. But other than that, Clippers really haven't been great in that series. So I do think that Dallas closes that series out tonight, but they're going to have a big step up in competition in the next round.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the same thing that I would have told you about the Pacers in the next round going up against the Knicks, and the same thing that I said about Minnesota in the next round going up against Denver. Like there's a big step up in competition that these two teams are going to have to deal with, and so I think that Denver will. As good as Minnesota looked in the first round, I think that Denver handles them pretty easily. Same thing with the Knicks against Indiana. And then I would expect Oklahoma City to beat Dallas. Maybe not handily, but in 6 games probably.
So a lot of this was to kind of poke fun at the Clippers and the fact that things have not worked out for them over this, what is it now, 4-year stretch that they've been together?
Five-year
stretch that they've been together. Man, time is flying.
They've won. If they do not win this series, it would be 3 playoff series wins in 5 years since they got Paul George and Kawhi Leonard.
What do they do with this? Like, I know the headline today in the NBA is, you know, obviously Lakers overshadow whatever's going on with the Clippers, and they fired Darvin Ham. But the Clippers got a situation here where they've got, like, they've invested in this, and then they wouldn't get go and get James Harden, and none of it works. They are an aging team in a season where the theme or the highlight to me is the passing of the guard. Like, I think that's the main thing. I know I got the seedings mixed up, but the thing to point out or to pay attention to is it's the guys that are up next or the guys that are here right now, Jokic in that case, but then the SGAs of the world, obviously Anthony Edwards. I mentioned Luka, who's been around for a while, but is still very, very young. Like, it's those guys' leagues now, and not so much the Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, and James Harden of the world. They feel like it feels like a failure, and it feels like they don't really have a direction to go after this.
I wouldn't say it hasn't worked just because they still finished top 4 in the West this year, and they were really good for.
Congratulations.
Hey, that in the Western Conference, that counts. And they were probably, they might have been the best team in the West for about 3 months. And it just happened to be the wrong 3 months. And so it is tough because they are kind of pot committed to the team that they have. And they signed Kawhi Leonard to an extension, but Paul George is a free agent. James Harden's a free agent. They're moving into a new arena. They can't really rebuild because they don't have their own picks moving forward. So they're kind of locked into this team. And this is where front offices make their money. They have to be able to figure out a way to improve along the edges, and they've done a decent job. Terrence Mann's a decent player for them. They found something with Amir Coffey. Vita Zubac is a more than a serviceable center. It's just for them, it's just about staying healthy at the right time. And so many of these teams, it's Philly, they can't stay healthy at the right time. The Clippers can't stay healthy at the right time. Milwaukee can't stay healthy at the right time. Like, so much of this stuff just happens to be, like, luck. And, you know, Giannis has basically missed the last 2 postseasons. And, you know, now Kawhi is going to finish hurt now for... Kawhi got hurt during the 21 playoffs. He missed all of 22. He got hurt during last year's playoffs. He's hurt during, like, so much of it. And he played a lot of games in the regular season, too. Like, I think he probably played more regular season games this year than he had since maybe he was in San Antonio. So it's just all about keeping guys healthy at the right time.
Do you feel like Kyrie Irving, who you mentioned, has been probably their better player for the Mavs in this series, Luka's numbers are still actually pretty good considering that he's hurting, probably not playing his best. But does it surprise you at all that Kyrie has done this image rehabilitation and that it has worked as well as it has with the Mavs? Because, I mean, obviously Kyrie is supremely talented, one of the more talented guys you'll ever find. But I had my doubts about this one, and that seems to be working out pretty well.
I think you were right to have doubts about it just with how it looked last year. Last year, they weren't together for very long, but they went from being, you know, I think they were probably like top eight when that trade happened, and then they fell out of the play-in altogether by the time last season ended. They've made some smart moves, though, around that roster. You know, they got lucky with, you know, they tanked out of the play-in to keep their first round pick. That got them Derek Lively. Lively has turned into a really good center for them and really a perfect complement for Luka Doncic. And then they made a couple of good, you know, they kind of mortgaged what was left of the future by, you know, trading for PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford. But they've built smartly around that roster. And again, that's what smart front offices are able to do. That's what a team like Phoenix has really failed to do these last couple of years, is to build around the edges. Like, the smart teams, anybody can get the superstar. Anybody can draft a guy, but it's about the teams that don't have cap space that are able to find guys off the street or find, you know, the undervalued free agents. That's how you prolong windows. That's how you take teams from being really good to great.
Be honest, man. Are you really going to watch this Magic?
Absolutely.
You're going to really watch this?
I thought Game 5 was outstanding.
The Magic Cavs?
Yes, I thought Game 5 was terrific.
So here's the thing. You might be right, but guess what you would have to do to know that? Turn to it. You'd have to actually turn. So like, I'm having to take your word for it because it never occurred to me to check.
Well, I was watching Game 5. I was locked into Game 5.
All right. So maybe it's going to be a double screen situation. Maybe I should check out this NBA TV special. You know,
it's no NBA TV. No, now.
I'm saying, because, and this is the reason why I say that. And maybe this is just more of an indictment on the East. But it's hard to get up for a team that, you know, has no shot at making the finals. And I mean, no shot. And I couldn't imagine either one of those teams beating.
Well, no, they're going to get. Oh, actually, you know what? I could see them pushing Boston a little bit in the next round, but this is the only series that has a chance of going seven. Because in all likelihood,
mercilessly,
in all likelihood, Dallas takes care of business tonight. That series is over, and there's only one series left. And
do you? But and that's my thing, though. Do you want a seven game series to nowhere? Like I want more basketball, so I'm not complaining about having the basketball. It's just like, man, I'm not sure if we need this.
Well, I say yes because, first of all, Orlando is a team that could be in that mix next year. Like, those young guys are good enough, and they've got cap space, and they've got some maneuverability to where that team next year is maybe a top three seed in the Eastern Conference. And frankly, with the way the East looks, they could crack the top two. And that team had a chance to be a top two seed going into this playoffs had they been a little bit better down in the last week of the regular season. And then Cleveland is a team that could break up. And, you know, you could have Donovan Mitchell on the move. You could have Darius Garland on the move, depending on how that series turns out. So there's a lot at stake for both those teams. And while I don't necessarily think they're championship contenders, they're both good teams. They're both quality teams with a lot of talent.
We're seeing a transition here with the league. I mentioned that. Do you feel like there's a team in the West that the Rockets can displace, overtake? I don't know, it doesn't exactly work that way. But
they have to in order to get into the play-in. But the other problem is that you have Memphis behind them.
Right.
San Antonio's behind them. Yep. San Antonio's going to be better next year. But you look at the teams that finished in the top 10 this year in the West. Sacramento is a team that I feel like is probably topped out at this point. Who knows what happens with the Lakers? Who knows what happens with Phoenix? We've talked about this before, but they are going to have to get better in order to get into the play, and they can't just like stay where they are at this level that they finished at this year and expect to be there. But yeah, there's a possibility of a couple of teams dropping back, but their ceiling's a little bit higher than I think some of these other teams.
Coming up next, an update on a very important Astros starter. Astros got the Mariners at Minute Maid Park this weekend. We're going to talk about all of that in the 5 o'clock fire. Stay with the Drive. That's coming up next.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.